Hey folks, it's Brian Cook, your host here, with a couple of words from our sponsor, AdamandEve.com. You can make this Valentine's Day one that you'll both never forget with this amazing offer from AdamandEve.com. Through Valentine's Day, you'll receive 50% off just about any item. Just go to AdamandEve.com and you'll find over 18,000 adult entertainment products, including toys, lingerie, and a seemingly endless selection of adult DVDs. And there's more! With every order, you'll receive our romance kit free. Our romance kit includes a toy for him, a special massager for her, and a little something we know you'll both enjoy. Plus a free adult DVD to put you in the mood. And that's not all. Oh no, we'll also throw in free shipping on your entire order. So check out AdamandEve.com today for this special Valentine's offer. Get 50% off one item, a free romance kit, and free shipping when you enter offer code FAN. That's F-A-N, FAN, at AdamandEve.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 173 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Today's show was recorded last December 28th, 2015 at Union Hall in Brooklyn. This is round two, featuring Aparna Nancharla, Ben Kronberg, Mike Kaplan, and Will Miles reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. First, you will hear them choose topics, then we'll fast forward into the future to hear the finished pieces. Enjoy. Mike Kaplan and Robert Dean, ladies and gentlemen. Clap your hands for these very funny and capable folks. Thank you, Michael. Let's start with you, Mike. Mike, step right on up to that mic. Clap your hands for Mike Kaplan.
I took your papers.
Here's how this part works. If Mike likes the first suggestion, he can take it and run with it. If he doesn't like it, I will draw a second one, and then you will all vote with your applause on which one he has to write. I cannot read a word of that.
I'll take it.
Don't know what that means. Steve Harvey is your first option. Your first fantastic option.
I like hearing second options.
Your second option. Commander Shepard is your second option.
Give me Steve Harvey.
Ladies and gentlemen, who wants to hear Steve Harvey? Who wants to hear Commander Shepard? What is Commander Shepard? Somebody yell it out. More time? Thank you. Okay. Well, nobody wanted it anyway. Steve Harvey, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Kaplan. Keep it going for Mr. Will Miles. You can do better than that for Will Miles. I believe in you. Your first option is Winnie the Pooh. He's already not wearing pants.
It's pretty perfect for me. Yeah, let's hear two options.
All right. Let's try Bambi.
I'm going to go Winnie the Pooh.
Not your choice, my friend.
Not my choice, yeah, right.
Either way, you're fucked. Who wants to hear Winnie the Pooh? Who wants to hear Bambi? We're doing Bambi for sure. Keep it going for Aparna Nancharla. Your first option is Bill Nye.
Another option.
Okay. We've got, that's blank. This has so many words. Patrick Swayze is your second option. The actor Patrick Swayze. Who wants to hear Bill Nye the Science Guy? And Patrick Swayze. Bill Nye it is. Aparna Nancharla, let her hear it. Keep it going for Ben Kronberg. There we go. Final Fantasy VII.
I think you know what I'm thinking.
Yeah. We're going to reach back into the old bag of Rooney here. Thank you for crumpling that one up. Well, I'm going to do the same. U.S. Supreme Court justices. So, who wants to hear Final Fantasy?
Okay. Thank you.
One of you suggested it, so clap for your own shitty Supreme Court justices. Ben Kronberg. Finally, Mr. Robert Dean.
Thank you.
Bobby. Angels in the Outfield.
Just do it. Just do it. Just do it. I'll do it. Angels in the Outfield.
Angels in the Outfield right out of the gate. Robert Dean. Who do we got? Who do we got? Mike Kaplan? Ladies and gentlemen, your first round two competitor. Give it up for my hero, Mike Kaplan.
Thank you, everybody. So keep in mind that I did it the fastest. So my story is about Commander Shepard. Wait, I'm sorry. That was the runner-up to my suggestion, Steve Harvey. If you don't understand or appreciate that, then
that was a very good joke. That was a very good joke. Lost
that's
on all of
the
you
only
somehow.
Reason that Steve Harvey is relevant right now is literally the joke that, like everything else that I'm. Okay, anyway,
this is gonna go great.
Real glad to be here. Steve Harvey was fucking Commander Shepard. He was really giving it to him, or her, or them. Not really sure what Commander Shepard is. My guess is a German Shepherd, so pretty freaky. Steve is dressed up like a Nazi, and the German Shepherd is dressed up like a Jew. Transgressive. I'm not saying that Steve Harvey fucks dogs, or that he wants to fuck dogs, and I don't want him to fuck dogs. But I do want to fuck dogs. So, survey says, in this story, he does. He is also the host of Family Feud. I don't know if that's... Do you guys know anything about Steve Harvey? Okay, good. Every person that Steve has sex with, he imagines that they're a dog. But he's so ashamed of his desire, he won't even fuck them doggy style. Only missionary, because he's a Christian. And he calls it human style. And so who are the humans that he's fucking? The original kings of comedy. First up, Cedric the Entertainer, the first one I could think of. Steve is getting ready for a big show, calls Cedric, invites him over. But Cedric says, I'm the entertainer. You don't entertain me. So Steve heads over to his house. But then the entertainer gets entertained. You know, fucked. And so Steve comes in and says, what's up, dog? Which has greater meaning than Cedric knows. And then their clothes are off, and as Steve's cock is about to enter Cedric's entertainus, he whispers to him, of all the asses in the universe, yours is the number one one that I want to be inside. Wait, I'm getting word that you're actually number two. And every ass is actually a number two ass, so I have to leave. Then it's off to D.L. Hughley's house, and he says, don't tell anyone, I'm going to give it to you on the D.L. Hugely. That's the thing that I thought would be fun to say. And that's all we need for that joke. Also, good job on Studio 60, he says. I liked it. It was like the West Wing, but lower stakes. Anyway, so then he says the same thing he said to Cedric. There's not really a lot to Steve Harvey. So then it's off to Bernie Mac's cemetery plot. Or urn. Not sure if he was cremated. Let's say he was. So Steve Harvey jerks off extensively with Bernie's ashes. More like Ernie Mac. Okay, everything's fine. He said that as he climaxed. And then more like Bernie climax. And then he climaxes again, which he keeps doing forever and ever if he was cremated, which got immortalized in the David Foster Wallace book, Infinite Jizz. And an untapped market, turning books into porn. Next up, what about Steve's book? Act Like a Woman, Think Like a Man, which now is Sack Like a Woman, Dink Like a Woman also. It's about how body parts don't determine gender, a super uncharacteristically trans-celebratory look at a progressive future for all kinds of equality. Wait, nope, just in, that's the opposite of what Steve Harvey is like. But okay, let's say Bernie Mac was buried. More like buried Mac, that's enough of that. Okay, he can't stop, also he's me. So he sits over Bernie's grave and says a prayer, and then because prayers work 100% of the time, his prayer is answered. Bernie rises from his grave, and Bernie's Mac rises as well. I call his penis his Mac. And then Steve puts Bernie's cock in his hand, his Mac, I should have said that there, his Bernie's Mac in his hand, and uses Bernie's ashes from the other Bernie Mac death reality as lube. Don't try this at home for a few reasons. Ashes are only good lube for a dead dick. And so this menage a trois, where two of the trois are Bernie Mac, continues. In Steve's mind, he's thinking, this will be great research for my next book, Act Like a Necrophiliac, Think Like a Man, dedicated to zombie Bernie Mac's dick. Anyway, all of this is my answer to the Family Feud question, what do you think this audience was looking for from a Steve Harvey erotic fanfiction? And it looks like it's the number one answer. Wait, we're finding out it's actually number two. And In conclusion, what were the top five answers for weirdest parts of this story? Number five, Bernie Mac fucking himself. Number four, the phrase Cedric the Entertainus. Number three, prayer works. 2.5, Steve Harvey has a best-selling book. Probably because prayer works. Number two, I know all of the original kings of comedy. And number one, a black man dressed as a Nazi fucking a German dog dressed as a Jew. Probably shouldn't have opened with that. It was the best part of this thing. So thanks a lot, everybody. My name's Mike Kaplan.
Mike Kaplan. Ready, Will? Will Miles. Keep it going for Will Miles. Sweet Willie Miles.
How's it going, everybody? I have Bambi. It's gonna get real fucking weird real quick. I didn't watch too much Bambi, so I had to Google a couple things, but I knew one thing in particular. Alright, so let's begin. All right. Bambi, the big swinging dick of the forest, walked to the middle of said forest with his friends Thumper, a rabbit high on cocaine, and Flower, a pothead skunk who smoked weed that smelled like himself. They came across Feline. I think it's Feline or Feline. Yeah. Feline, thank you, human. Feline and her friends bathing by the river. Bambi looked at his friends and then back at the doe, a.k.a. female deer, before yelling out, I came here to do two things. Talk to my mom and crush pussy. And I'm all out of moms. The thing I'm most proud of in the world. Feline got out of the pool like Bo Derek in the movie 10, which, while an old reference, is not as old a reference as 1942's movie Bambi. Feline swung her doe hair back and walked over to Bambi. Did you say crush pussy? Because I came here to do two things. Get my pussy crushed and grab your dick. And I don't have any thumbs, so one of those is not an option. Bambi's dick rose from under his body like when you fold out a table at your grandma's house. And he slid... I just pictured folding out a table. And he slid his brownish deer member in that sweet, sweet doe puss. Thumper cheered, and Flower looked for some pussy of his own. Flower knew his sweet skunk smell would attract his type of girl, and he sprayed a tree. As soon as he did, a white squirrel, notice the word choice, a white squirrel with dreadlocks came down from the tree and said, it smells like somebody smoking some kind buds. Flower looked at her and said, well, that smell came from my asshole, but I do have some great weed. The white dreadlocked squirrel looked at him and said, did you say asshole? Before she bent him over and started rimming her tongue around his smelly skunk ass. Flower pulled a joint out, took a puff, and farted weed into the squirrel's mouth. Because that's possible in the forest. Thumper pulled out his rabbit dick after he saw all this and started furiously masturbating, trying to harness some sort of erection from his coked out dick. Feline, still in the throes of passion from Bambi's heir-to-the-throne cock, yelled in orgasm, which alerted her doe friends to come see what was going on. They saw Bambi and Feline, Flower and the squirrel, and the masturbating Thumper, and went and sat on Thumper, one on his face and one on his really small in comparison to a deer penis. They rode him. At one point, Thumper put some coke on the doe's pussy and snorted it. Then he really started rabbit-fucking the girl riding him. Nothing? All right. rabbit-fucking? All right. Bambi yelled out, I'm almost king of the world. Well, this part of the forest, as he started coming, pulling his penis out of Feline's sopping wet pussy and coming on her back. It's the grossest thing I've ever said. But a little still got in there before he pulled out because he doesn't have hands to properly direct the cum. Flower and the squirrel at this point had eaten each other's asshole and were close to orgasm in missionary position. The squirrel yelled out, crack that nut. And Flower came. Then Thumper and his two coked out does, another more word choice, came and crashed, fainting on the ground. Nobody had condoms on, and 9 months later, three of the strangest children were born inside that forest. And that's the end of the story, and I'm really most proud of that mom reference in the beginning.
Thank you. Who else is ready?
Bobby!
Sweet Bobby Dean, ladies and gentlemen. Clap your hands for Robert Dean. Clap your hands for that fucking sweatshirt, Jesus.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. So mine is obviously going to be called Angels in the Asshole, who didn't see that coming. A foster home is no place to go through puberty. Young Roger, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, was discovering. He first discovered his growing puberty when he noticed his caretaker Maggie's heaving British tits. Roger loved getting hugged by her and losing himself in her massive rack that smelled of Earl Grey tea and Vicks VapoRub. Roger's growing sexual appetite couldn't be suppressed. One day, while watching Maggie's chest heave in the kitchen while she made orphan gruel, he got his first erection. "What's that?" his precocious friend JP asked. "Quiet," Roger demanded, and he went back to staring at Maggie's luscious tits. Then he heard a motorcycle outside, so he tucked his dick in the waist of his pants and ran outside. "Dad," he exclaimed. His father, on an idling motorcycle, was about to bid him goodbye forever. But being a real piece of shit, he wanted to give his son an impossible scenario. "Hey, Rog," the dad said, asking his... What the hell? I can't even read my goddamn writing. Asking his... whatever. Ashing his parliament on his boot. Unnecessary detail. "Dad, you're here to take me back?" Roger asked. "No, God, no. I just wanted to show you my motorcycle and drive away while you cry." "Dad?" Roger said sheepishly. "What's happening with me?" he asked, dropping his pants, showing his dad his boner. "Oh, you're just horned up. Like father, like son. Want to hear stories about prostitutes I bang while not loving you?" the dad said. "No, thanks," Roger replied. "I just want to get rid of it," Roger said. "Well, there's two ways to go about that," his dad responded. "You can fuck or think about baseball." Roger looked to the Angels stadium and began thinking of baseball and his favorite team, the Angels. He pictured them play, and they were sexy, sexy men. Dermot Mulroney, Matthew McConaughey, and the sexiest Tony Danza. His erection grew, and Roger's dad got afraid of his horniness. "Stop, stop, don't think about baseball," his dad told him. "How old are you?" "I'm the shittiest dad and forgot." 11, Roger asked, not knowing himself. 11? "Well, it's about time you lose your virginity," his dad said. "If I lose my virginity," Roger offered, "will you come back and be my dad and we can be a family again?" "Tell you what, empty promise time," the dad said. "If you lose your virginity to, let's say, Angels general manager Danny Glover, I'll come back and be your dad. We can be a family again," Roger's father said while laughing and driving away on his motorcycle. That night on his bunk bed, Roger masturbated for the first time into his rough orphan sheets while thinking about baseball. He prayed, "Dear God, please let me lose my little boy virginity to Danny Glover." A star twinkled in the sky. Meanwhile, some of his cum dripped down onto his friend JP's face. "Yum frosting," JP said precociously. The next day, Roger and JP went to the Angels game. Roger wore his baggiest sweatpants and needled his little wiener with his fingers the entire game. By the seventh inning stretch, a man appeared next to him. "I'm Al," he said. He looked like Christopher Lloyd. "Quite the little hard-on you got there," he said. "I'm an Angel," he told Roger. This is a true story that I went through. That's why I mistook that. I said, Roger, this didn't happen to me. Al said, you pray to God with an extremely selfish wish, and God delivers on all selfish wishes of children. So I'm going to help you get your rocks off. I need to fuck Danny Glover. Roger said, well, let's work some angel magic, Al replied. Out of nowhere, angels appeared and lifted Roger up, removing his clothes and placing him on the field. Now, rarely are streakers at a baseball game children, so the crowd didn't know how to respond. Some cheers, some gasps. How would you respond? The angels held back the guards as Roger stormed the mound. The old man pitcher, Tony Danza, turned just as lust-crazed Roger was on the mound. Whoa, the fuck? He exclaimed. Before angels pushed him to the ground and removed his clothes, Roger put his boy dick in his mouth as an angel, winked to us, the audience, for some reason, took hold of his tiny butt cheeks and guided Joseph Gordon-Levitt's dick to face-fuck Tony Danza. At this point, general manager Danny Glover marched out into the mound. Whoa, 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 he said. That's my pitcher. Roger told him my premise. I have to butt-fuck you to have my dad love me. Your dad's a shithead, Danny Glover said. That's an impossible, arbitrary dream. Ain't gonna happen. But I have angels helping me, Roger said. I'll show you. At this point, Roger ordered the angels in the way we all know. And I want the entire audience to go ahead and join me in this. He waved his arms like such. You gotta believe, Roger said. At which point, Al and the other angels grabbed Danny Glover and threw him to the ground, removed all his clothing. Roger slid his tiny boy dick into his asshole, obviously. And as he fucked, still going like this. Danny Glover went, I'm getting too old for this shit. All right, that's it. Good night, everybody.
Robert Dean. You good? Keep it going for Ben Kronberg. Crony B.
Oh. I had a real... doing it on my phone outside, and my phone was at 40%, and then totally died. And then so I found some outlets. And then... blah, blah, blah. I'll be polite. Fuck you guys. Fuck you guys. You never ask anybody how their day is, do you? You just have your day. And go to bed. I get it. Okay. Supreme Court justices. All right. I walked in the bar that had fake candles. It wasn't an aesthetic choice, but because the fire department had come a week earlier to alert the bar, they didn't have a permit for open flame. Janet Jackson's Black Cat was playing on their sorry excuse for a jukebox. That's not to say I wasn't a fan of the choreography of the music video, but I thought the departure for Janet was a little too extreme. I had been hired as a private dick in the public sector. I was tailing a Supreme Court justice who was made famous for not indicting that pig who shot the kid. Except I wasn't there to see that justice was served. I was there because this justice of the Supreme Order was screwing around on his wife. She was an older dame that looked 10 years younger than most of the broads that I fucked half her age. She had suspected her husband was not so faithful last summer when he kept going outside to check his emails when they were having a dinner party with a bunch of other scumbags who thought they knew what other people's fate should be. I met her in a coffee shop where she gave me the lowdown on her husband. They apparently hadn't had sex in the last 6 months. Truth be told, they hadn't made love in the last 6 years. This dame was lonely. I could see it in her eyes. Her Merlot-stained teeth said it all. She wasn't looking for the truth. She already knew it. She was looking for somebody to listen. And that's my specialty. We ordered a couple flat whites. That's what they call a latte in Australia. I've never been there, but I overheard it enough in conversations to know what it was. She started out by telling me that he would shame her for not reading books. He would buy her books for Christmas gifts and suggest she should know what was inside. She never read a page of them. He was a Colombian Jew that grew up in the projects. She gave me some other details, but I stopped paying attention because I couldn't help but notice her licking her lips after every sentence. She would lick off the lipstick and then would reapply. So on and so on. I'm a mouth looker and couldn't take my eyes off of hers. She had a petite build, but a big head. At first, I just wanted her money, but after about 10 minutes of listening to her yarn, I just wanted that mouth. Her husband was out of town at the time shooting elephants or some shit. So I asked her if I could come over and get a closer look at what I was dealing with. Before I knew it, we were in the kitchen where they like to fight. She opened up a bottle of Merlot, and that's when things got real. She recited their wedding vows to me, but then ended by saying, "Promises are for liars." I couldn't agree more. She then excused herself to the bathroom. When she came back, she was wearing a teddy that her husband had bought her 2 Valentines ago. I wasn't much for lingerie, but this dame wore it well. It wasn't long before we were both sitting on the couch talking about movies. I knew all I had to do was bring up the French New Wave and she'd be mine. As soon as I dropped the Godard bomb on her, she leaned over and whispered into my ear, "I can fit my fist in my mouth." "Is that right?" I said. She then shoved her foot in my face and told me to suck on her toes. I complied. Why would I not? I'm not a monster. She then proceeded to shove her entire fist into her mouth. I barely noticed having a mouthful of toes myself. She then took my head like she was some sort of fucking dentist and pried my mouth open and proceeded to hawk the biggest loogie I'd ever seen in my baby bird of a mouth. I swallowed with glee. Before I knew it, I was stretching her holes open with the force of a fireman rescuing a driver from a crumpled Ford Focus. There was nothing this broad wasn't into. I opened her up so wide I could have rented her insides out for $1,200 a month. I'm talking real square footage. It was all I could do to keep myself from coming, as my prostate had been horribly neglected for the better part of Obama's last term. I had a few tricks under my belt and knew a compliment would buy me some time, so I pulled my squirrel out of the tree and told her how nice her hair looked. She didn't miss a beat and said, "Stop with the pillow talk and finish making the cum cellar you started." I complied and inserted my cheesemaker into her contracting pelvis. She could tell I was about to finish, and she forced me into her wine-stained mouth. As soon as I exploded, she looked like she saw a ghost, and then immediately sneezed cum all over my peacoat. That's right. I'd never removed my lucky peacoat, and it kept me so warm all these years. She then wiped the cum off my peacoat and smeared it on her Steve Maddens. She told me to lick it off. As soon as I was done ingesting my mistake, I told her that I'd take her case. "I want to see that man pay for what he did to you. Not to mention what he didn't do for that kid that got killed." She ordered me an Uber, and I left. Me and the Uber driver drove through Taco Bell on the way back. I ordered a Taco Supreme. Got the driver a double-decker. I asked the driver how his night was. He said, "Not too busy."
Okay. Ben Cromberg. Giving over Aparna Nacharla, your final competitor of the evening.
Okay. Give it up for everyone you saw. This is great. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. As you recall, Bill Nye the Science Guy. Untitled. Okay. The usual again? Asked the cheeky, mop-headed, gay Asian bartender with the tight butt at the Los Angeles B-rated dive bar called Recently Shameless. It was a spot frequented by reality stars eliminated early on in their respective programs. Yes, said Bill Nye, noncommittally. He wasn't sure why he kept coming back here. It had been over 2 years since his less than glamorous stint on season 17 of Dancing with the Stars. 2013, check the Wikipedia. It still haunted him. That nagging quad injury was the least of his problems. Something wasn't sitting right with his stomach. Maybe it was that he was on his fifth mudslide of the night, a drink he was committed to metaphorically as long as global warming continued to be an issue. In the current 2016 presidential election, he adjusted his bow tie, too tight again, but oddly sensual. Raul Joaquin, the bartender from earlier, came back with his drink, and also a weird amount of hair gel now on his hair. Was that semen? Who knows, thought Bill, preoccupied with his own white struggle. Everything okay, Bill? You look like you suddenly realized the earth was flat this whole time, said Raul Joaquin, laughing too long at his own joke, and then maybe even slightly farting a little. This bar was B-rated for a reason. Why am I even here, thought Bill. But what he said out loud was, I don't know why I keep drinking these dang mudslides. They stop up my colon like nothing else. Oh, come on, said Raul Joaquin. Let's call him RJ from here on out. You've always had a thing for chocolate. What the holy skeptic is that supposed to mean, thought Bill, critically thinking his way through an overwrought sigh. And then, just like weird analog clockwork, in walked trouble. Well, not walked as much as was escorted through a heavy entourage of science babes and Harvard PhD bouncer-looking types. Could it be? Yes, it was. Affirmative. And none other than his number one frenemy and sometimes co-collaborator whose IMDb page he definitely did not check every day. Mr. StarTalk himself, Neil deGrasse Tyson! Okay. He was wearing purple faux fur. A trend he had recently gotten into on the advice of no one but his own rising star. Bill tried to duck down so NDT wouldn't see him, but it was like there was a tractor beam on him set to stun. Either that or it was RJ loudly shouting, Yo, Tyson, your friend's here. The next thing Bill knew, Neil was next to him. And he said, Hey, don't I know you from somewhere? Hey, stranger, said Bill, long time no see. Aren't you a frequent guest on Larry King Live, said Neil. Oh, go debate yourself about God, said Bill. But he couldn't stay mad. He could never stay mad. The next thing Bill knew, Neil was next to him buying drinks, plying Coca-Cola, and generally being the science party boy people knew him for. He was four mudslides and five goof pills later that Bill remembers Neil became less of a person and more of a vague collection of horny atoms. Or maybe that was him. And maybe it was the fact that him and his faithful wife of many years just hadn't been copulating lately. Or maybe it was his Seattle roots, but suddenly he really wanted to see Neil's space needle. Hey, Neil, he began as a hypothesis. Do I want an a load of your scientific method, said Neil, beating him to the punch as always. Hell yes, I would. We are but specks in the cosmos when we could be sex in the cosmos. Good rhyme, said Bill. Thanks, said Neil, but it needs further test rounds to really shine. Here, I know somewhere quiet we can go, but by quiet, he actually just meant the bar bathroom. The next 6 minutes was some of the finest pleasure of Bill's random existence. There were volcanic reactions, orgasms. Bill was on top, then Neil was on the bottom, and yet still on top. That's why he's doing so well. Some real depraved necking. Bill's penis's expected wore a small blue lab coat and a bow tie and glasses, and pointed out in a friendly yet engaging way where it wanted to come. Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson's dong was bigger than a horse's, but everyone already knew that. How else do you get so far in the physics game? Well, some of the actual details were fuzzy. Bill chalked it up to the mysteries of the cosmos. And he did apologize to Neil for coming so quickly, but he was trained to keep his segments to six minutes or less based on his years and years on a kid's show. Neil excused himself by throwing on his purple fur and saying he had to stop by the Chateau Marmont before the night was over to meet up with Jake Gyllenhaal and friends. So Bill made his way out of the bar bathroom alone, but very satisfied for a night's research. His findings were sound. I told you you had a thing for chocolate, said RJ, sliding another mudslide his way with a wink. Well, at least his colon was clear.
A partner, not Charlotte. Let's get all the round two competitors to the stage. And he's, hang right there. All right, once again, while they're coming up, I'm going to remind you of what everybody read. We started with Mike Kaplan with Steve Harvey, then Will Miles with Bambi, Robert Dean with Angels in the Outfield, Ben Kronberg with the Supreme Court Justices, and finally Aparna Nancharla with Bill Nye. So pick a favorite with your applause, starting with Mike Kaplan, Steve Harvey. Will Miles Bambi. Robert Dean, Angels in the Outfield. Ben Kronberg, Supreme Court Justices. And Aparna Nancharla, Bill Nye. All right, I think that's very close between Mike Kaplan and Aparna Nancharla. Let's do it. Let's do a runoff. Really sell it for your favorite, starting again with Mike Kaplan, Steve Harvey. And Aparna Nancharla, Bill Nye. That's a tie. Aparna and Mike, one more time for your co-champions. Everybody in round two, yourselves for being a delightful, if somewhat indecisive, audience. I've been your host, Brian Cook.
That does it for round two. To hear round one from this show, you can go back and download episode 172. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. And for more details, you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Cooking or follow the show at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.